Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 165.
Yeah. My thing is, I feel like most people would have seen me at, like, Eyes Wide Shut style orgies, but then I'm wearing a mask. Definition of irony.
I think you can have that as a, yeah. You may know me from a mask sex party.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we ask all of the bosses in America to calm down. I mean, it's after Labor Day, but we don't need to be a dick about it. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and I don't know. Is it just me, or is the, like, after-school, post-Labor Day zeal on the American working front so much more intense this year than previous years? I don't know, at least for me. Also, why aren't we all French? I'll just continue to say that for my entire life. Why aren't we all French? Globally, why aren't we all French? Because I worked in Paris for a bit of a time. I'm not trying to brag. Listeners may know this about me. I'm pretty sure I mentioned it.
Oh, it sounds like a brag.
It's a little bit of a brag. And they just weren't, you know, that intense about it, about any of it. And it was like a nice way to live.
Comme ci, comme ça.
You know, weirdly, too, I also had a living wage as a waitress. So, anyways,
that's fiction.
It feels like sci-fi. Like, it feels like I'm talking about, you know, some sort of, like,
calm
Game
down,
of Thrones
Isaac
fantasy
Asimov.
Yeah,
he's a science fiction.
Anyways, you guys, what am I saying? Today, we're not going to talk about France. Like, maybe just, like, only tangentially. We're eating baguettes, though, throughout the podcast. I want everyone to know that.
Would that be correct?
Petit baguette. Today we're going to talk about the sentient Chipotle burrito in the White House and his fetish for and his fetish for maps and terrorist organizations. We'll also talk about Brexit. We have a special person here to talk about that. And finally, cycling. Is it a real possibility in our future? Okay, I'm so excited about this panel. Neither of these ladies have been here before. They're here for the first time.
Fresh meat.
Bringing their energy, their new newness energy into Fake the Nation. Oh, it's such a great feeling to have them both on. Mm-hmm. You guys, joining us, you know, she's a New York City comedian. She's performed all over. But most importantly, right now she has a show at the UCB. And a lot of you know UCB because it's fucking one of our fancy comedy institutions here in New York City. She's got a show called Never a Boy. And I've also been told it's not only super fucking hilarious, but unbelievably crude.
It is unbelievably crude, and it's a one woman show. I refuse to share the stage with anyone.
You guys, it's Chloe Kozer.
Yay. Hello. I honestly expected to hear applause. I was like, oh yeah, here comes that part. It's like, oh no.
I was about to.
We're going to originally do this podcast at Yankee Stadium. You know, so there would have been that applause.
Yeah, my hot dog allergy, we couldn't do it.
Right. So that's why we had to move locations. Also joining us for the first time, stand-up comedian and actress. You would have seen her on Mock the Week on Netflix or Game Face on Hulu. She's all over the place. She's also here very especially from the fucking United Kingdom, which may or may not be crumbling as we speak.
It's on fire.
She's so funny. She's so fun. She's has just like an amazing resume of the stuff she's done in the United Kingdom. And she's just bringing that juice here into the United States. And we're so excited to have her. It's Tiffany Stevenson.
Thanks.
Hey.
Yes.
You did clap.
I got your back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I still
the
didn't
neediness
clap.
Of performers. did I get enough love? Clearly not. such judgment on my parents. Yes, I'm from the UK. It's on fire. Like, when the world's on fire, travel. That's what I think. So.
Yeah. Run away from your problems. okay, well, let's get into it because we're going to talk about your fucking problems, you know, in a segment.
Yes.
But right now,
let's talk about yours.
Let's start with topic number one. Everyone is working harder and after Labor Day, and that means popular vote-losing minority president Donnie Twimp is scandaling even harder. Let's start with the Taliban. So he announced on Saturday that he had canceled secret talks with the Taliban at Camp David. Also, I feel weird. I'm like doing a Nevada thing, like Taliban. How do you guys say it? Taliban?
I've said Taliban. When you said Taliban, it felt so classy.
Yeah, yeah. And then I almost felt like weird that I was eleganting up the fucking Taliban. You know what I mean? Like, they don't need any more elegance.
Okay. Hey, guys, where are we eating tonight? Taliban.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just turned them into like a swanky new restaurant where it's hard to get resis.
I'd call it the old tally. Taliban, mate. The Taliban. Make it very nice.
Gotten in. She knows yeah. Friends of the manager.
Right. No, that's just like a fucking falafel joint. All right. Here we go. So we all want to get out of Afghanistan. Getting out is hard and it requires making some sort of a deal with the Taliban. And now the peace talks that have been going on with them for the better part of a year have failed. What's strange is that he was going to have this secret talk, right? These secret talks at Camp David, also with the Afghan president. And he was going to do it the weekend before 9/11. So that's interesting. And he was the other thing is nobody knew they were happening except for like just a handful of people. So he sort of like didn't need to tell us that they were going to happen. And then he decided to cancel them. But that's what he tweeted, which is also interesting diplomatic move, and we can talk about why that's interesting. Yeah. But what did you guys make of this?
I feel like I'm just repeating what everyone else is saying in the world, but it just feels like a cartoon, like such a ridiculous failure. I mean, go figure that he's a horrible diplomat.
Yes.
I would love to know why he canceled it. Like, I can't help but feel like it was a personal, stupid reason because it wasn't like the State Department. It was like him canceling
golf?
It. Yeah, golf.
I know, like taking a weekend to do talks. Like, I don't, you know, like he doesn't really do weekends.
Like, I feel like likely feeling somehow disrespected by somewhat normal political discourse.
Well,
and then disappearing.
The sort of stated reason was that there was like a bombing that took the life of an American soldier. But the fact of the matter is the Taliban, you know, had waged high intensity warfare throughout this 11 month negotiating period. So it's not like this one incident of a soldier dying in Kabul was really the evidence of violence. There had been multiple points of violence. So that's not really, you
Trump
know,
doesn't
that
care
seems
about
odd.
Lives or soldiers or American citizens. Like, yeah. There have been deaths in a lot of places.
Yeah, so
and journalists.
And just to put a number on it, there's been 16 deaths of U.S. service personnel since the talks began. So pointing out this one in Kabul seems like not the reason.
Yeah, I feel like he would have had to have been instructed to care.
Right. Yes.
Like someone's like, you should have an emotional response to a human dying. And it's like, well, if you say so.
Right.
Occam's razor never really applies to Trump, does it?
No.
Unless it's him shaving his face. Yeah, like the most obvious answer is the one that's in front of you. Or maybe it is actually. Maybe Occam's razor does apply. That he just had another plan. Like, maybe the joke I made about golf is the truth.
The most
obvious.
Truth. Yeah.
That's Occam's razor, right? The most obvious solution is the one that's...
Right.
Yeah, or the simplest.
The simplest.
Right.
I feel like we have to have a new definition of simple in this area of, like, cartoon fascism.
I mean, we now both have blonde autocrats running stuff, which sounds like a cool... 80s electronic outfit, doesn't it? You'd listen to them, right?
Oh,
you're going to see the blonde
keyboardist.
My God, but they're B-sides. and what do you think of this? Do you think it was just he planned on having a photo op and it just... But there were... Here's the thing, I don't think very many people would have wanted him to have a meeting at Camp David because it's like... August and American and da-da-da. Like, these kinds of talks would technically, generally happen in, like, Qatar or something. You know what I mean? So do you think there was – that he just – I guess what I'm saying is I feel like he wanted a photo op. It became increasingly clear that a photo op came with too much international attention that wasn't going to deliver the same way Singapore didn't really deliver. North Korea still is it
this
testing
aiming
nuclear missiles
for a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah. It's... He's just always going for a Nobel. And he's trying to maintain, he's trying to keep his campaign promises. And he had said he's going to pull troops out and blah, blah, blah. To add to this Taliban story, John Bolton, who's our third national security advisor, was fired or resigned. We've got two conflicting accounts, one from Donnie, known liar, and one from John Bolton, like, terrible person, but I don't know how much he lies necessarily. right. So he says he offered to resign, and that's kind of how it went down. I think that's the other thing is, like, basically, what is the room like with Donnie and fucking Pompeo and John Bolt? Like, how is any of diplomacy happening? Like, if you had to, like, guess, is it just like...
I legitimately think it is a large group of people trying to prep someone who is wholly unequipped and unpredictable to go do the work. Like, I'm just trying to picture, like, if I was getting someone to do, like, one of my sets, and I, instead of, like, another trans woman, I got some random bro-y cis dude, and I, like, had to give them a quick, like, crash course in gender. and will you stay to the script? And he's had, like, 5 Bud Light Limes. And it's like, maybe he does it. Maybe he goes out and says what's on the cards, and... maybe he wades into the audience, fist swinging.
He's been criticized, hasn't he, for not letting national security deal with it. But it's like, it's okay, guys. I'm going to take him for a nice steak dinner. Donnie's going to sort all of this out.
Like, wow, is Donald Trump here?
What does he think is going to happen? Like, this, it's good. So that I'll sort it out. It's the kind of almost like dad approach to, like, kind of any kind of conflict.
But the other thing is, like, it's so dangerous to kind of clue him into any of the – to keep him in the loop is so dangerous because for him to tweet, we were going to have this thing, and I canceled it. And then for him to go out in public and say, yeah, the talks are dead. They're dead. And he kept saying that. They're dead. The talks are dead. Makes the other party that you're trying to engage in peace talks with very – like, not confident in you. You know what I mean? They're just going to be now entirely skeptical with, like, going into anything because you're like, oh, your plan is international humiliation. That's your plan every time. You know,
and the timing of this is so, like,
and
off,
then right,
right?
around, September 11th, which is today, as we tape this on a Wednesday. So that was all, we'll see the repercussions. It also just feels like we do need to have some sort of a deal in place. If we do want the troops to come home, and we do, I think most Americans do, the Taliban's going to have to be involved in that discussion. And that's the unfortunate reality.
You can't ask Britain how to pull out because our prime minister doesn't even know how many kids he has.
Right.
So he clearly has a problem with pulling out. His Wikipedia page says 5/6.
What? Are you serious? That's hilarious.
Wow.
Oh, I just also
and we don't know how to leave, as we're proving so brilliantly with Brexit negotiations. Although we did leave in 2014, obviously we did. We left Afghanistan, but
right. But the other interesting thing is that Obama had recognized early on that, like, he was going to have to do negotiations with the Taliban, and of course Donnie tweeted in 2012. I think it was 2012. criticizing Obama for going into those negotiations, which is now hilarious. Okay. let's move on to Donnie's other just sort of like beautiful performance from the last couple of weeks. I didn't even want to talk about this. I didn't talk about it last week. There was a hurricane. There was a doctored map, a map that was doctored with a Sharpie because he had claimed that the hurricane was passing through Alabama. The hurricane was not passing through Alabama. The local field office in Birmingham of the National Weather Service said, oh, guys, just so you know, it's like literally not going to pass through Alabama. So please calm down. You know, you don't need to put your barrels of grain into the house just yet. And so then the news came out that what's-his-face, Wilbur Ross, had threatened to fire people at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for contradicting Donnie on whether the hurricane was going to pass through Alabama. So now, so I guess my question is, I went from being like, I'm not going to cover this. This is noise. It's fucking absurd and ludicrous and embarrassing and ridiculous and a minor crime. But I'm not going to talk about it. And now it feels like there's just so many tentacles that do you feel like it's rising to, do you feel like we should be talking about it, basically?
I feel like it's worth pointing out that this is what he's willing to do for pride. And I mean, you see a lot of berserk out there. Leaders have done that throughout history. But whenever I've read about it, I mean, like, and I don't know as much history behind this, but like the Castilian lisp, they got adopted because monarch had a lisp and everyone else appropriated it. It's like, that's what's being done now, like forcible ignorance. It's like just nod your heads. And this is just all the proof of this leader who's a sociopath and has been rich his entire life. And even like, again, his like diplomatic style is, I am just going to play the power card every single time. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to play it again and I'm going to throw a tantrum.
First of all, I fucking love that you talked about the Castilian lisp. I had no idea, but also that's how it ended up
manifesting
itself. And I didn't know. But that's such a fantastic example of how these things are ruinous, because now all those people in Spain have a lisp.
Well, there's a Turkmenistan dictator who renamed all of the months after family members.
Right, yeah.
So this is what wild dictators do. And that is why I think people should be talking about it, like really talking about it, because it is, you're politicizing the weather. That's small talk. What are people going to do?
Yeah.
Like when the president says it's this, but it's clearly not.
Yeah.
The president says the sky is pink, but it looks blue to me. And then you just get coshed. You know, like it has a touch of the 1984 about it. And I don't mean to be, you know, these are the inches that people, if we ignore them, you know how the lobster doesn't know it's being boiled.
Right.
If you increase the temperature of the water incrementally. So I think if you keep letting things like this go, when there are experts in the field going, no, this is not the case.
Yeah.
And you're suppressing that and saying, no, you do not challenge our gracious leader. This is what he said. Like, I think it's really, really dark.
I think it's really important. It's like from right when he took office and he was lying about the size of the inauguration crowd. I was like, oh, God, no.
Yeah, I think the nice thing about this particular situation, the one nice thing about it, is that now that there were these threats of someone being fired, it's not just that we have the lying, right? That it's not just that we have Sharpies on a map. It's that there can be an ethics investigation into whether or not Wilbur Ross actually threatened to fire people for contradicting the president based on the facts that weather wasn't going in that direction, right? So, and there are people asking Ross to resign, and I am 100% for it because, or at the very least, there should be due process because this is ridiculous, above and beyond ridiculous, that we're putting the livelihood of people below the president's pride. We're putting the president's pride above the livelihood of people is a better way of stating that. But you know what I mean? Like, so I feel like what's good about this situation is it got to the point where people were threatened to be fired and then had to put out a statement, say, you know, sort of like acting like the president knew what he was talking about. I mean, it's crazy. These things are a part of the public record and people listen to them.
Yeah. I didn't mean to say, I was like, that's really, it's really, really dark. I didn't mean to like put that like kind of,
cloak across,
but I feel like it's the beginning of something terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's really hard. People really, you know, and I'm one of them, criticize the media for what they cover. And for the week of that hurricane, I was just like, we shouldn't be covering this. We should be covering his response to actual disasters. Like, I don't, you know, who cares, the Sharpie,
but this
whatever.
Is his response.
But this is, but his response is, response. Yeah, his response is dangerous and unethical. And people almost got fired. I mean, it's fucking crazy. So I think...
But not to mention the fact that saying that a hurricane is going to go somewhere that it's very likely not going to leaves people ill-prepared for where it likely is going.
It creates public panic. Everyone starts lisping.
Yeah.
Everyone's lisping, calling the months things like Gene.
Jeff-tober.
Yeah, exactly. Just making up, making stuff up. Like,
by the way, that's like one of my favorite dictators. I think one of the days, he renamed days of the week. And I think one of the names, it's like Supermanat Niyazov or something is the name, his name, I can't remember. And he renamed one of the weeks like Wednesdays was like Mother's Day, like about over like after his own mother's like the day that they could like worship his mom.
You give your least favorite family member Monday, right?
Yeah.
That's my Monday joke. I'm a professional comedian.
You give Monday to your creepy uncle.
All right, you guys, let us take a quick break. Let's take a quick break and hear about our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll just fucking get into the garbage pile that is Brexit. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app. And I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
We are back. And before I get into the next topic, I just want to let you guys know there's this fantastic thing going on this weekend. It's called the New American Festival. Maybe I've mentioned it before. I'm actually a small part of this festival, but the festival has so many amazing events, so many great comedians. Hasan Minhaj is doing the festival, and me. I'm doing the festival on Sunday at 4 p.m. I'd love to see you there. I'm on with Aparna Nancharla, who you know from this very show, and Ronnie Chang from The Daily Show. And oh my God, it's just like the lineup is incredible. And I really hope that if you are in New York City, you pick up some tickets and come on out. You can get tickets at newamericanfestival.com/tickets. So newamericanfestival.com/tickets. For any of the shows this weekend, I specifically am on one Sunday at 4 p.m., so please come out. All right, let us move on to topic number two. Boris Johnson is not having the Brexity time he thought he would as prime minister. He tried to outsmart Parliament by shrinking the amount of time they had to talk about a new Brexit deal. It's a thing they call proroguing, which also ridiculous that you guys have a word for it anyway.
And it only rhymes with Joe Rogan.
It does.
So you know it's shit.
It's the time that Parliament spends to podcast.
Yeah.
He imagined he could pull off a no deal Brexit by basically keeping people out of the building. But then Parliament passed a bill that essentially said you have to have a deal and you have to ask Europe for an extension. And that was particularly embarrassing to Boris because he had vowed not to ask for an extension. I mean, what is going on?
Well,
Tiffany, can you explain your people to us?
If you had homework, would you be allowed this many extensions? Like, at this point, you're like, why haven't you handed this in on time?
I'm an enthusiastic crier, so yes.
Where to begin? Boris was like my worst case scenario. I was glad Theresa had gone because she was ruining leopard print for everyone. So, like, it's the people's print. Step off it. It's not for you. But yeah, Boris, how do I describe Boris? I describe him as being more irritating than the wrong size tampon. And by that, I mean he provides a chafe that is constant and borders on the existential.
Yeah.
A very graphic description, right? But I think a fair one. So this is the worst possible scenario. I mean, I'm laughing, but I honestly don't know what's going to happen. My kind of sort of leanest hope is that there's this kind of cross-party majority in talks of like putting Theresa May's deal on the table again, but also having a second referendum. In which, you know, the ideal scenario would be we stay in the EU.
Yeah, and so this whole thing was just for no reason. But
yeah.
Wait, do you...
Well, also, it's a huge embarrassment for Boris. Like, it's got biblical. Even his own brothers walked. He got rid of 21 Tory MPs.
Right. Can you talk about that? I'm so fascinated by the 21 MPs and his brother. Like, so just explain for people who might not understand, like, what happened?
Well, this is the same as sort of with Trump. It's that thing of Boris and Trump both having this kind of sharing this disagree with me and be fired.
Right.
So Boris kind of was pushing for an early election, which was his way to kind of distract from the deal and everything else. So Corbyn and everyone else, like, they've all said no. And he said, unless you back me in this, I'm going to sort of withdraw the whip, which means that there are the MPs there with peerages and stuff who, like, lifelong, you know. In fact, Winston Churchill's grandson, I think, or great nephew. I can't remember his grandson
or
great
nephew.
And considering Boris looks up to him, that was pretty remarkable. So basically.
So they like broke ranks with the party.
Yes, they did look at, he said, unless you stand with me on this, like agree with me or like back me or quit. I think it was back. He was like, I remember seeing a headline that said, but yeah, back me or be sacked. And I thought, back and sack, you've only left crack. Like, we all know those are the three that go together. Yeah. So it was like, back me on this, back me on this or crack. So it's sort of unprecedented scenes, really. I don't even really know. Like,
his own brother was a member of the cabinet.
Yes, yeah.
Who also left this.
A lot of the Johnsons are kind of media figures, and there's tons of them. I mean, I joked earlier that he doesn't know how many kids he has. I don't know that Stanley Johnson, his own dad, knows how many, because they seem to keep appearing. I think Johnsons have disappeared from public life, and then another one pops up, and another one pops up. So yeah, his brother quit because he couldn't, in all good consciousness. It feels like, from Conservative MPs, it feels really kind of like they're making a moralistic stand, which is worth noting. And because, you know, as someone who bashes the Conservatives on a regular basis, these are people going, this is going to be devastating for our country. There's no plans. Boris is one of the people who marched us into this in the first place, which is why it's so galling for him to now be prime minister, because he was the one with Nigel Farage that were pushing the Brexit, the Leave campaign, and writing lies on the side of a bus. We all know if it's on the side of a bus, you should believe it, right? I mean, but having said that, people did vote believing that we gave the EU millions of pounds. And they said on the side of the bus, we'll put that straight back into the NHS. That money can go to the NHS. And they just lied. And there's been no consequences for that. And this has been dragging on for 3 years. Like, I once flirted with a guy in the office for 3 years who turned out to be gay. And honestly, that was less of a waste of time. I don't know. I don't know what else to say at this point. Like, where do we go from here? That's my only hope. Like, I mean, he's going to go and they're going to, Theresa May's deal, which is a bad deal, which has been, you know, like they've turned that down 3 times. But I guess that's the best possible outcome for me, for what I want politically, right, is for them to go in. Another option is to ask for an extension. France are not going to be willing to
extend
unless we dramatically, kind of something dramatically changes.
Yeah.
So I think the rest of Europe are just like laughing at us at this point.
In a court case, you can't, you know, you can't ask for an extension unless there's new evidence, right? So, like, there has to be something, I see France's point.
Yeah.
But it looks so dire. To me, the idea that 21 MPs broke ranks is so fascinating. And the reason
it's like a Watergate moment. That's how I sort of described it, right?
Yeah. It's fascinating because can you, Chloe, imagine 21 members of the GOP breaking ranks with the president over anything?
No, I can't. Because the Republican Party is just focused on consolidating power. I do want to say one thing that bugs the hell out of me is, like, if you are an objector, if you are the prime minister is your brother and you disagree, don't resign. Don't give your spot that's going to go to someone else who's for it. Like, stay and fight, you coward.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that how...
It didn't quite go down like that. Like, it was, if you vote against me, I'll fire you. Like, they didn't step down. He sacked them.
Oh,
he withdrew the writ. Yeah, he withdrew the writ.
They
didn't walk. I mean, they knew going in, if they made this call, that they would be fired.
Okay, that I didn't get that from the coverage. I got to be honest, that makes sense though.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Can we fact check that?
Boots, yeah. 24. Yeah, that's
correct. So they didn't walk. They didn't.
Oh, wow.
No, yeah, he was like, if you vote against this, I'm going to withdraw the whip. I'm going to take that.
Yeah. So and
we still
and
have hunting terms in our government. It's that's where it's, that comes
from. Part of the I think problem, and even just like talking about Brexit, is that as Americans, we don't understand fucking new elections. All this whole thing is just very, and like firing people, like how is that possible? You know what I mean? Like it doesn't track, but that makes sense that 21 people would rather lose their jobs. It just doesn't seem in the American context, it would be like, you know, face a primary challenge.
That's why I thought it was like Watergate, because there was that moment, wasn't there, where Republicans went,
right,
we can, in good consciousness, we can no longer
support this president.
This president and what they're doing. So it's kind of a version of that, but with they were told ahead of time, unless you support it, you know. So they're falling on their swords.
It looks like there's very little that can happen, right? Like there. If he refuses to ask for an extension, which is a possibility, he could face impeachment.
He could be jailed for contempt.
Right.
Oh, so wouldn't that be?
But
amazing.
it almost seems like
Boris behind bars. I can already see it.
But do you almost Boris. Feel like he wouldn't mind being jailed for contempt?
Oh, I think he would think it would make him a martyr to the cause.
Right.
I really genuinely, I mean, having said that, he wrote an article, a newspaper article, kind of for all the reasons we should stay in the EU before he jumped on for kind of political glory, I think. I've watched Boris Johnson do this over a number of years. He's played a very slow game. When when we voted to Brexit, after the referendum, Cameron had to quit. And because the only reason he was trying to shore up these UKIP vote, he promised in order to get his government, you know, that he would offer the far right or right wing, you know, UKIP voters a referendum. No one thought
that
we were going to vote Yes.
Yeah.
No one thought. And when they say the will of the people, it's not the will of the people. It was something like 17.6 million.
Yeah.
Versus like 16.9 or something.
Right. Something so ridiculous. Like,
and then the rest abstained or aren't registered to vote or, you know. So there's less will of the people. It was sort of half and half, really. Degrees. So when that happened, Cameron, so this is Boris Johnson's long game. Boris was instrumental putting the lies on the side of the bus. The hateful posters basically going kind of, these people are taking your jobs.
Right.
You know,
the, like anti-immigrant.
Anti-immigrant. Yeah. And you're like, no, do you know what? Self-service machines are going to take your jobs eventually. But that's a whole other discussion.
Right.
You know, like automated.
Yeah.
Everything will all be replaced by machines. So that kind of went out into some, Johnson was behind that. And then obviously when the vote went through, it was like a poison chalice. And I always compare it to, in the UK, there's a pier in Brighton, I think it's called the West Pier, which was burnt down, gutted. You can buy it for £1, but you have to promise to spend like 25 million on it.
Yeah.
And that is a bit like the leadership during, like Prime Minister during this whole process. Like, you can have it. There you go. But now what are you going to do? Because I used to say, it's like the men made a mess and then they turned to the nearest woman and went, clear this up then. That's your job. Women clean stuff up. So Theresa, and I hate her. I can't be clearer about that. But in some ways, I was like, what is she supposed to do in this situation?
Right.
She's been given a poison chalice. She's been given a no-win scenario. And then she was like, I'm going to quit. And, you know.
Which is, by the way, the standard, like the way most female CEOs end up getting appointed a CEO is when a company is in dire straits. They bring on a woman because most men reject the job.
Right. Because there's no glory. Ends up
being, right.
And that's why Boris didn't even throw his hat into the ring. Well, he sort of did. And then he got stabbed in the back by Michael Gove. But it was, you could see it was career, I don't want to say politicking, but he was kind of making maneuvers. And then also he's this kind of clown in, you know, almost exactly the same as Trump, in fact, brought onto panel shows like Have I Got News For You and patted on the back and we all laugh and we all have a giggle at this, like, kind of, isn't he a clown? Look, his shoelace is always undone. If your shoelace is that, and it's all staged, because if it wasn't, like, your parents would have put you in Velcros when you were like 12 or 13. Sorry, your boarding school headmaster would have put you in Velcros. You know, if you were that incapable of like tying a shoelace or fixing your hair. So it's all been part of this very long process to kind of make himself seem affable and get here. And now it's an embarrassment. I mean, they're calling it a sort of remarkable, like, soundly defeated across the board in a remarkable streak. And I would say it's more of a skid mark on, you know, British democracy. And
I mean, okay, I hate to ask for predictions, but how do you think this is going to shake out?
Well, like I say, I'm hoping it shakes out with a second vote. I have no idea at this point.
Does that feel like a popular, is that what people want? They want just another vote?
I think so. Yeah. I think an informed vote. Like I think they should not call it a people's vote, I guess. I've just said people's vote, but it was people who voted the first time.
Yeah.
It wasn't aliens. So what we need to call it is a deal vote or an informed vote. So that we can have, you know, so that people have information and facts and then go, can we? I don't know if it's possible to still remain at this point. I think that's what people's vote were pushing, but then they were also pushing a deal vote. So the ideal scenario for me would be that we didn't leave, but we can't have a no deal Brexit because that's economically.
Right. But because also, and you know, what's interesting about all of this is like, this is what Putin wanted. Like,
yes.
Putin wanted endless years of chaos, political chaos, in which the UK is so overwhelmed by this issue, it can't be any kind of a global force, right? And Europe, and then it has spillover effects on the EU's ability to do anything on a global scale. I mean, it just is endless, the domino effect of this thing. And so it's like, and what's fascinating to me is, why would Boris Johnson want that? Why would anyone in public life in the UK want that?
I think.
And why does Trump want it? You know, why does Trump want it for the United States? Why does Boris want it for the UK? I mean, it's just like, it defies logic to me.
I think it's if I have to burn this place down to rule it, I will.
Right.
Whatever it is to self-serving, better to rule in hell than serve in heaven.
Yeah.
I don't care what happens to this so long as, like, I benefit.
Yeah. It's so, it feels, is it that dark? I mean, it just feels that dark.
It's hard to not think that. I think there's a hell mouth in Westminster and we're going to have to send in Buffy. I don't know. Like, think of the heat in like London and here recently. Like, we're hotting up. Like, I feel like a hell mouth is opening. That's all.
Yeah.
Just getting, you know, climate change or a hell mouth. I don't know. Could I be mean, either.
It is that dark.
Like, what if Brexit is the reason why the temperatures are going up? Just specifically, it's Brexit.
I think most climate scientists agree that it's Brexit.
Yes. Yeah. We don't know for certain until someone puts it on a map in Sharpie.
Right,
yeah,
Sharpie.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, really don't need. Leave the... It's just like leaving the door open during the summer and your AC's on. That's what Brexit is.
But someone should send Boris a Sharpie in general. That might help him with his power problems.
I think I described it as... to Americans about the situation in the EU is that, like, Britain's in the spare room indefinitely. We're just, like, sleeping in the spare room. We're not allowed in. And we,
It's like when, it reminds you of Texas wouldn't join America and they were just starving and were destroyed. And it wasn't until, like, they were reduced to ash that it was like, yeah, we'll join.
Right, right.
I grew up in Texas, so we studied a lot of Texan history.
Yeah.
It was nothing but... Just this berserk pride.
Yeah, I mean, we're running out of medications where there's like kind of lists of stuff that we are currently, you know, that we get
that's madness.
From Europe. So, yeah.
Well, we are going to keep track of the fucking nightmare that is the UK, by the way. Oh, and the other thing is, like, Scotland would most certainly secede, right?
Oh, right. So there's a second referendum for independence that's being talked about at the moment. I mean, the SNP were singing in Parliament. Like, that's how, like...
Yeah,
singing,
yeah.
Like, just singing song. Like, Parliament has gone to... Someone called the Black Rod came out to, like, when the Speaker stepped down, John Bercow quit. Mm. Like, and the... This is someone who's dressed like Adam Ant and looks like... one of my aunts, and look up a picture of the Black Rod, and like, just when you think it can't get any weirder, someone snatched the mace in Parliament. Like, it's all gone batshit. There's been like hundreds of years of this kind of seemingly etiquette, like, kind of, or like, you know, very British kind of not polite because they're always banging the table, hubbubbing, but like that, you know, there was a veneer at least, I guess, of supposed what's the word I'm looking for?
Customs,
like
customs etiquette,
and etiquette, and like just behavior,
decorum.
Like Rees Mogg is lounging around and on the benches. People are singing. At the Black Rods come out. It's gone Old Testament. Oh, I don't know what's happening.
Like, if someone, it's one of those that, like, if I saw it in a cartoon and they brought in someone who had a mace, I'd be like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
This is jump the shark for me. There's been so much of this recently. I was like, if I read this in fiction, I would go, no.
That's, yeah, totally. Well, okay, you guys, we'll see what happens with Brexit. And it might take years of us talking about fucking Brexit, and hopefully not. Wouldn't it be amazing if just like next week they figure it out and it's done?
Yes. It's like, oh, it's fixed.
We've been talking about it for 3 years. It's one of those things.
It's so boring and fascinating at the same time.
I've done all the jokes about it. What else is there left to say? It's just like trundling on and on.
Oh, God.
It's like a loveless marriage. Like, we'll be like 40 years down the line, we'll be like, well, I can't believe we still haven't left. But I guess we're just used to hating each other now.
All right, Brexit, the loveless marriage. Okay, let us move on to the next topic. But before we go, I wanted to let you guys know that I know a woman running for New Jersey State Assembly. Her name is Laura Fortgang. She's in New Jersey's 26th. And I hope you check her out and help strengthen that blue wave on the state level where it really could count, you guys. So if you are in New Jersey, if you live in New Jersey's 26th, please, please look her up. You can find her on... You can find her at fortgangforassembly.com. And Fort Gang is what you think it is. It's FORTGANG. So fortgangforassembly.com. And if you guys have any interesting races you want to highlight, as always, please send them to me. I'm up for that shit, and you know it's all, we're starting to things are starting to get spicy with the 2020 elections. All right, let us move on to topic number three. This topic came to us from a listener. She is related to Robin Heitman, who was killed in New York City this past June. It was her first day working as a bike courier, and she was hit by a delivery truck. Robin was an extremely capable and experienced cyclist. And I should point out that this year so far, there had been 12 cyclists killed in New York. The listener also goes on to explain about her family's experience with cycling, pointing out that these are their fatalities, not just in New York, but they're on the rise nationally. I mean, there are 840 deaths in 2016, the highest in 25 years.
Wow.
And our listener is on a kind of personal crusade to help spread awareness. And I just want to say to our listeners, I'm so sorry for your loss. And I was really inspired by the fact that you were able to take this raw grief and try to build awareness around it. So thank you so much for writing. This is, you know, loss must just be unspeakably sad. But her email really got me to thinking about our relationship with cycling. And again, this is something that's kind of come out of New York City local news, but it is an issue all around the country. What struck you about the story, and how can you explain the surge?
I mean, my immediate theory is that I feel like cycling is getting more and more popular.
Yeah.
Like, I have so many friends who are avid cyclists, and one of the things they say is, like, it is just a matter of time before you get doored, before someone who's parked opens a door like right in front of you and you hit it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I actually biked for a little while in New York before I just got like.
And was it scary?
Yeah, I found it very scary, and I wasn't going through particularly busy areas. And then this was sort of what sealed it. I was biking and I got a used bike and the chain came off.
Oh, God.
So the pedaling stopped working, and I was pedaling while standing up. And this is back when I had testicles, and I fell down and racked myself and nearly hit a parked car.
Oh my God.
And there were no cars on the road, and it was like, because I'm like an aware person. I'm a good driver. I've got like a good like 360. I'm good at. I feel like I've avoided a lot of accidents that like other people wouldn't. But like, yeah, I mean, a lot of the most athletic people I know get into bad accidents. Like my friend Matt Rubano, who's a musician and comedian, who's actually for a long time the bassist of Taking Back Sunday, and has a Grammy for The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. He was like 19 and played bass on it.
One of my favorite albums.
Yeah, I heard that he was in the rock band, and I was like, oh, well, I know that. I'm going to ignore that because I don't really know that band. And then I found out he was on The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. I was like, I asked for that for Christmas.
Yeah.
But he just woke up in a hospital. Like at some point, and he still doesn't know what happened. Like he tried to find the footage, but he was on his bike and then he woke up in the hospital.
Wow.
Something happened. And like he doesn't know if it was like a hit and run or what.
Did they put him into a sort of medically induced coma or something?
No, he was just out. He was knocked out for like probably like he doesn't exactly know how long.
Wow. You know, and you're absolutely right that the number of daily bike rides has just increased. It's in fact it's more than doubled between 2012 and 2017. There's nearly 500,000 cycling trips made every day in New York City. I think that, you know, it's so interesting. We're like kind of in a convergence of a bunch of different things happening. We have city bikes. You also have a city bike share program in
Boris
London.
Boris bikes. Boris was mayor of London.
Oh, are they, so these were big, they really heavy, called Boris bikes?
Well, they were called Boris bikes.
Just, like,
yeah.
Conversationally.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fun. Yeah. So we have that system. It's extremely popular. And it's great. I mean, you know, my husband uses it every day. He will do anything in his power not to ride the subway. He bikes absolutely everywhere using City Bike. And it's great. And it makes him feel good. And he's out in the open air and he's getting some exercise. I mean, it's just I get the appeal. The other interesting thing is, like, so there's that. But we also have an increased number of rideshare cars on the streets. So it's just led to generally more congestion of cars. So there's more bikes, but there's also more cars. That creates congestion all around and more dooring opportunities and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. And the subways are getting worse. Which I imagine lends itself towards more bikes.
Right. And the subways have gotten worse. And then if you look at the rest of the country, there are no subways. So people are – it's in some places it's just like a broken busing system or a very unpopular busing system that maybe doesn't go very many places.
One of the few modes of transport then.
Yeah. So it kind of is like, if unless you drive, which most people in other cities drive, biking is maybe your only thing. Now, the interesting thing is, like, we actually have bike lanes here in New York City. It's only one in five streets have a bike lane. So it's not like we're swimming in fucking bike lanes. It's still only at 20%. But and hopefully that number is going up. But the problem is, it's like you'll be on a bike lane and then suddenly you won't be on a bike lane because it's just not a comprehensive system of bike lanes. But where they are protected, I mean, it's nice. You're in a separate lane. There's a row of parked cars, which could door you. But there are technically a row of parked cars, like, protecting from the traffic. I think the other interesting thing about this is the level of anger people have about cyclists.
As a pedestrian, because many cyclists obey no laws. They're coming the wrong way down one-way streets. Like, I got hit by a bicycle after being in New York for like 4 months because a guy was going down a one-way street in the wrong direction, and I just checked the correct direction, and I was so fresh from the Midwest that I apologized to him.
I've had friends saying that when I cross, I'm staying with my friends, they're like, as you cross this, there are cycle lanes, and they're like, but you have to look both ways. They said in particular delivery, food, like delivery, you have delivery,
food delivery.
Couriers and stuff like that, yeah.
Because they're on deadlines and they're like, we
rushing.
Just need to get there.
That's
yeah,
the
it's
other
like
thing.
Truckers and methamphetamine and how like they're almost forced to do it because they have to keep these unrealistic deadlines.
Yes. I mean, that's an excellent point. So not only are we dealing with congestion in the streets from rideshare apps, we're also dealing with people who are working for Instacart or, you know, these popular delivery services, and they're on bikes and they're going at speeds and in directions that are illegal, and they have to do it so that they can earn some piddly wage. So the interesting thing about the problem is that it hits a million different issues of income inequality, like whether or not we have a living wage, we don't, you know, how we treat congestion and traffic, how we treat pedestrians, whether or not we have sufficient public transport. All of these issues kind of come together to create more cyclist deaths.
It does lead to the bizarre true sentence that late stage capitalism causes bicycle accidents.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And so I think the gig economy, so much of it is involved. And the other interesting thing to me about it, though, is that it's such a simple, talking about Occam's razor, solution to our kind of clean energy problem. There's really sort of no reason why we can't, most of us, be riding bikes. If you look at something like Beijing circa 1995 or whatever, everybody was on a bike. That's what you found on the street.
In Holland, they do that.
Right. And in Holland, they do
that. But also, I think bikes have the right of way. Everything is
around bikes.
Is around bikes, is built around. So people have cycling, but they also have powered bikes, you know.
Yeah. Do you think that there's that stuff. In the what? So I don't know how long you've been in the United States, but do you feel like there's any kind of? And you've been to Los Angeles,
yes. So they're little birds.
I just thought about those in a different conversation like 2 days ago.
I love them.
I couldn't stop laughing because just the thought that you can put them. Yeah, they're scooters, and you can rent them, and then there's not a docking station. You just leave them.
Just leave them. But people have been throwing them off buildings out of. So people who live there hate it. I was in Venice Beach. And we'd gone to visit some friends, and they were like, "Well, we'll just scoot down there. We'll grab a couple of these little things," and they're such great fun. The only thing is that again, then there's safety concerns come up because really, if you're hopping around on one of those little birds, you should have a helmet because they go like 25 or something, you know, like 30. I don't know.
Wow.
I think I heard it was like 16, which is shockingly fast.
Is that 30? Would that be like 25 in?
Yeah, it would be
miles
about that.
Per hour, rather than kilometers per hour.
Because it's five thirds.
Right. So yeah, so
So
you're licking along like at that. A pace. Yeah, you're licking along at a pace, and we saw someone come off one, like just literally hit a corner and come off. So they are, but they're great fun, and the convenience.
Do you take them on the sidewalk? How do you drive them?
Well, you're supposed to have them on the road. You're not supposed to have them on the pavement. But then I saw a woman trip over. Some and a guy was like, throw it in the garbage, you know, like kick it
but
in the road.
This to me is
because
like
these were people hating them. But
what is the point of hating them? Why?
Well, also, the reason the woman tripped over it is because she was looking on her phone. Like, that's one of the other issues. She had her face in her phone, so there was one sticking out a bit. She wasn't looking in front of her, and she tripped over.
Well, to be fair, I generally walk down the sidewalk with some idea that I'm not. Having to deal with errant scooters.
Yeah, true. But they are about, they're annoying everyone for that. But I think they're great. I think they're really, they're so convenient. You can literally go, I've done it to get to my car, which is, I've had to park miles away on my car in LA. And I've gone, I'll just hop on this little scooter, get down.
But that's the thing is
wind in my hair.
That drivers hate these things. Drivers hate cyclists, drivers hate scooterists, drivers hate pedestrians. And I think that is something that we need to have some sort of a cultural shift around it, because why is it that these other forms of transport, your legs or a scooter or whatever, are somehow not acceptable to drivers? It's absurd.
I think it's because there's not an infrastructure for it, so that you do have people doing errant out there stuff, or you're not as prepared for it because you don't, as a driver, you don't know the, because I've mostly driven in my life.
Me too.
But in the Midwest, when I saw a cyclist, I was like, oh, this is very simple. I treat it like a car.
Give it that much room.
I give it that much room. If I'm going to go around them, I'm going to wait until I have a lot of space because they're functioning
safe.
As a car. And then that is it. In the city, it's this between thing where part of the time you have to function as a pedestrian, part of the time you have to function as a vehicle, and other people, like pedestrians and cars, don't respect that. I walk in the bike lane. I try and stay aware, but when
why would you even need to do that?
Because I'm often in Midtown and tourists are walking like five abreast at like half a mile an hour.
Oh yeah, okay.
Right.
Yeah,
and you're it's like, I just need to get round you.
Yeah, I'm moving between gigs.
Right, so
like,
we have a congestion problem.
Yeah, and there's nothing to support it, which means that since there's not a way for cyclists to navigate properly, that everyone is in the way of everyone else. It's set up such that it is impossible to interact.
Can you imagine, in whatever part of the Midwest are you from?
Indianapolis.
Can you imagine? And I've been to Indianapolis multiple times.
Why?
For shows. I've had a great time, Indianapolis. Can you imagine bikes becoming a dominant form of transport there?
I do wonder that. Everything is just so much farther apart.
Right.
I mean, Indianapolis, it's actually, this shocked me when I found out, it's like the 11th biggest city in the country.
Oh, I can see that.
But it's primarily suburbs. Like, if I, in Indiana, like to go visit a friend, oftentimes that would be like a 50-minute drive,
mm-hmm.
Hour and a half drive to go visit friends that are like a little bit more outside the city. I don't know as much how that works. Like there would have to be a train system.
Yeah.
There would have to be a great bus system in order for like,
to bikes supplement
and scooters.
Bikes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if we had, I mean, and that's where it's heading, because we don't have an infinite amount of fuel or energy. Or maybe like we nailed down some
really
sort of
solar car.
Does it
really feel like that's where it's heading? I mean, I guess, and this is my question for listeners, for whatever's happening in your own cities, is there any kind of march towards making, first of making cycling more safer, for creating infrastructure around cycling, like for becoming Holland? You know what I mean? Like, is there – the problem is we're a newer country. We built things not around pedestrian activity, which is a lot of European cities were built around that. We were not built that way, except for a couple of exceptions. And so we really need to do more infrastructure work to be able to make things comfortable for pedestrians and cyclists alike.
Yeah, like in Indianapolis, it's like if you want to walk through the city, sometimes there's just no sidewalk on a road.
No, I've experienced that in Los Angeles. I walked maybe a mile to get to a meeting.
But did you hike? I think you actually hiked.
I mean, and it's funny because I looked at Google Maps. It was like a 30-minute walk or something. And I was like, oh, that's nothing. I'll do a 30-minute walk. I'd rather do that than get a, you know, a Lyft. And it was dangerous. I mean, it was just straight up. I was just like, I am too close to the cars. How is this happening? I'm traveling from a point in Los Angeles to another point in Los Angeles. I wasn't even going into a suburb or anything like that. And it was just straight up dangerous. So there's a lot of, and then, you know, I think the thing that upsets me is that, like, I was just in a, I was shooting a movie. It doesn't matter. A very small part.
Yes.
I was with a bunch of celebrities and we were in a van and, they were – so there was, like, congestion on the streets and there was a bike lane. And these very liberal, outspoken liberal celebrities were fucking complaining. They were pissed that there was a bike lane. They're like, you know, they just keep building these bike lanes and there's, like, not enough room for this van to be idling that's going to cart celebrities from one point in Manhattan to another point in Manhattan. And I was just like – shocked out of my mind that I was hearing this, because it's like you would never hear them say that publicly or whatever. But I was like, what? Like, first of all, we should be on bikes right now, you know, yeah, as actors moving from one point to another
point. Are rich liberals really liberal?
Yeah. So that's, I mean, so I just, I think the national attitude shouldn't be, it's so driver
centered. This city's built for
centered.
It.
Yeah.
This is built for cycling.
It is.
Like London isn't. We've got all these higgledy-piggledy. You've got a grid system like Glasgow.
Higgledy-piggledy.
But you've got a grid. It's pretty flat everywhere, and it's easy to do on foot and cycle. Yeah. Where I live, I'm at the top of a hill, so that's my nightmare. I bought a bike in Edinburgh for the Fringe. I got about happily on it, but I did feel a bit scaredy.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the time.
That's
and
reasonable.
Then I was like, I don't have a helmet. I should have a helmet. That's my bad. Like stuff like that, you know. And then I was like, can I even get this back to London? Is it even worth it? Because the hill's so steep.
Yeah.
That this is going to be, I'm doing a workout to get somewhere as opposed to a bit of gentle exercise.
Right.
In order
which
to
is
get
where,
to and
which
from
is
work.
Where electric bikes, I think, are going to come in.
Yes.
It's going to help facilitate those hills and stuff like that. Well, you guys, I mean, I don't know if you could tell. I'm a big fucking fan of cycling. And I'm a big fan of making it safer for cyclists. And I'm a big fan of us just getting rid of cars. We don't need them if we're in our daily lives inside of cities. There are other ways we can get around. And I know it's going to take decades to transform American cities into that. But it also feels from a climate change perspective, it's really our only option.
I mean, it's going to happen when we run out of oil. I mean, everyone's pretending like we aren't going to run out of meat and oil, but those are, I think, time sensitive.
We have congestion charges and stuff coming in here like we have in London,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we do.
So
yeah.
I have my car, but now if I want to take it into central London, and I didn't realize when I bought it because I bought a diesel, well, the diesel or petrol car. So, like, there's a charge on that because of the consumption of fuel. So I pay something like £10 a day for that, and then 10 for the congestion charge. So before I've even put any fuel
it's
in my
shilling,
car,
yeah.
Pounds a day.
Or part, yeah, £20.
So that's,
if I go into the center of town,
yes.
And then does that function for you as what's it called? What's the word? Oh my god. a thing that makes you not want to do it?
Oh yeah, it makes it
deterrent.
Yeah,
it is a deterrent.
Yeah, it is. But sometimes also I need to go in for gigs or something, and I don't want to get the train that night, or I need to pop in. But it's easier just to get the train. And I have a nice like convertible car. I enjoy driving it. It's a Volvo. But it's lovely to have the roof down and drive about. But kind of going into the center of town, I'm like, right, it's £20 before I've parked, before I've got petrol. So I'm looking at sort of £30-40.
Yeah, that's you know, ridiculous. Yeah,
And so I'm like, I'll just get on the train.
Right, right.
And we, you know, in London, we do the transport is, although your subway runs all night, ours underground stops at midnight.
Kind of runs all night.
Right. It's like slower in the middle of the night.
And sometimes you just cannot get home.
Yeah. I mean, there's alternatives and bus things balloons and whatever.
let's start thinking about some of these other. What about hot air ballooning? What about skiing when it snows?
The tech bros. Yeah. Tech bros are talking about the fucking, what are those? One man hovercraft.
Oh,
Back to the future.
One man drones. That's what they're talking about.
Oh, really? Yeah. What? Like, how do they work?
Basically, it would be like a helicopter style jetpack.
Like
on your head in a cap.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Inspector Gadget. <It is.
laughs> So everyone's going to have to start working their necks because otherwise it would just pop your head off your brain
stem. Oh, my God. All right, you guys. People of Fake the Nation, we leave you with that image. But please let me know what's going on in your city. Is there something exciting on this front? And thanks again for the listener who reached out. I think this is such an important issue. And I'm so curious to hear how it's working out in other places in America. All right, you guys, that's the end of the show. How do you feel?
I feel like I'm constantly suppressing incredible existential horror in the world. Like, my mindfulness practice is sort of putting on blinders and like partially removing myself because I don't know what else to do.
Great. Tiff, how do you feel?
Like I'm wearing the wrong size tampon.
Oh,
as I said at
that
the top.
Was so great. It was such a clear metaphor for me.
Yeah, uncomfortable discomfort, but hopeful that positive change can happen soon.
Nice. Yeah, because at the end of the day, every uncomfortable tampon comes out. All right, you guys, I want to, I would love for the people of Fake the Nation to know where to find you guys. Ooh. How do they find you? Where do they consume all of your good works?
Oh yeah, I am, Chloe Koser, Koser on Twitter. I'm Chloe P. Koser on Instagram, and, my one woman show about coming out as a woman in my 30s and already as a comedian goes up at UCB Hell's Kitchen 2 times a month for what should be the next like 6 to 10 months, I think.
Amazing. Yeah. Right. Amazing.
Check that out. It's the best show in the city.
That's a way to sell it.
Yeah. Agree.
Yeah.
Tiff, how do they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tiff Stevenson. You can find me on Instagram, Tiff Stevenson Comic, although I'm not as good on that. Twitter's my baby. And my show, Mother, is going to be at Union Hall on Saturday.
Oh, this Saturday.
Yes,
yeah,
Saturday at 10
okay.
p.m.
Oh, awesome.
And so come along if you want to come along at 10 o'clock. And then I am doing it in London on the 16th. And then I'm out to LA to do the show on the 19th and 20th at the Lyric Hyperion.
I'm going to make all three. So
come to all four. Yeah.
I'll make three.
Yeah, okay. But it's my Edinburgh Fringe show and... Yeah, I can't be self-deprecating in America. I have to be. I can't go, oh, it's fine. It's a bit shit. I suppose come. I have to say.
It's the best show.
It's, yeah.
It rivals Chloe's show.
It's on a different night, so you'll be fine. But it was one of the best reviewed shows at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Nice.
Out of like kind of 3,000 odd comedy shows, it was the top 20 best reviewed.
Holy shit.
I find that unsurprising. You're
you
hilarious.
Guys, oh, please, nice. Please do check
Thank
out
you.
Both of
you
these shows. And I don't have a solo show happening right now. But like I said, you could come to the New American Festival. Go to any of the events at New American Festival. I think it's fantastic. festival, and you should definitely support it. If you would like to see me, I'm Sunday at 4 p.m. I would like to thank... Oh, and then also, please read my piece in The Progressive about Iran and our ongoing diplomatic struggles. It's fun. And there's upcoming shows here and there that that you can see me in. But I really would like to thank the production team here at Fake the Nation. That's our producer, Harry Nelson, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens. Gabi Alter wrote our theme music. Lily Fleshler helps with research. And you guys, please leave us feedback because that helps us with ideas, guest ideas, anything you want to hear on the show. Please, you can leave us a voicemail at 347-770-4981, or you can drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. And if you'd like what you hear, leave us a review. That helps people find the show. That's an actual thing. Thank you so much, you guys. We'll be back next week.